People told us at the time that we were crazy. There was a lot of second guessing, but yeah, I just knew for one that, you know, it was absolutely going to work. We were sort of like almost like the underdog in a way. Like, people didn't take us seriously or didn't think that we would, you know, do any good, because it was just two young guys that put up shop in Alcoos, and, you know, who are they?
Remember the last time you thought about quitting it all, running away to a far-off place, opening your own cafe, and living the rest of your life amongst the smell of fresh bread and coffee? For our guest today, this is literally how it all played out. His vision of opening his own restaurant started to take shape when he was all of 18. Today, he is the founder of a hospitality company that operates not one or two, but seven F&B brands. Pull up a chair and join the conversation with Tom Arnold, the Tom in Tom and Serge, and founder of Bull and Root, who told us the tale of how razor-sharp focus on your vision is one of the most crucial ingredients in the recipe for success. Hi there, I'm Chirag, and you're listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya FM.
I got into the kitchen when I was 18, straight out of high school. It was funny, I actually went to in Australia, where you, like, when you graduate, you go on this thing called Schoolies Week. So we went to like a resort town where, you know, my parents had a property that we could stay at. So from this big party that was there for a couple of weeks, I actually never went home. I got a job in that town. I was a dishwasher, and then I became a chef straight after that. There was a place called Lawn in Victoria. Yeah, I really, really just enjoyed the whole independence thing, and, you know, having my own money and my own sort of ability to go out and, you know, make my own decisions and all that sort of stuff. You know, I probably got myself into a little bit of trouble and sort of knew that I had to sort of get out of that little resort town and wanted to try and find a way to get into a big name restaurant. So I approached the best restaurant in Australia at the time, which was called Vue du Monde.
Vue du Monde, Australia's top fine dining location, owned by Shannon Bennett.
I had to go in there and knock on the door and basically ask them or beg them for a job. And they gave it to me, and I was stoked. So yeah, I became their first ever apprentice chef.
The fine dining kitchen is notorious for being hardcore. And that's not an easy transition, going from school to sleepy resort town to a highly competitive and cutthroat environment.
It was a big wake-up call. I really struggled for the first year, like, to the point where I'd be like crying and in tears and like properly struggling and thinking like, what am I doing here? I've got to go. I got kicked out of the kitchen a couple of times for the stupidest things. Like, I think back to like that sort of stuff and just think that the chefs were being absolute, you know, like really tough on me, because I was the youngest guy. I was the apprentice, the only apprentice, and, you know, like, and yeah, I got bullied a bit. And that really hurt me. And I tell my staff about this sometimes, you know, when they're down a little bit, that for some reason, just this one day, everything sort of started making sense in my head about how to plan my next five or six jobs that I need to do, or how to multitask or something like that. And just one day, I remember the day before I was in tears, and the next day I just worked out how to do it. In one moment, something popped in my head. And I literally have not looked back. And since then, I've just been figuring out a way to do stuff, you know, just like by trying, you know, and not thinking that I can't do it.
So what happens when you hustle hard and prove yourself to a world-renowned chef like Shannon Bennett? He takes you under his wing. And before you know it, you're traveling the globe, cooking for the higher echelons of the industry in some of the most glamorous cities in the world.
I was there for probably 3 years working in that restaurant. And then I left after sort of finishing my apprenticeship there. And then I took a break for a couple of months. And then I received a call from Shannon again, saying that he had an opportunity for me to go to Singapore, a restaurant he was consulting to. And yeah, I lived there for about 6 months and did this consulting gig, and absolutely loved that city. It blew me away, just like with the food and the culture and what was happening there, in a way sort of similar to Dubai. And they've got a massive passion for food in that city as a whole. So it's a place that I'd definitely go back to if I had to, you know, had to choose somewhere to live in Asia. And then that gig finished and I went to Spain. And I worked in Artzac, which was number 7 in the world at the time, about 3-4 months, again, just on a, you know, holiday working tour. That's an incredible restaurant, cooking for Woody Allen, you know, he used to go there all the time. And again, fine dining, 3-star Michelin, trying to learn my craft and just hone my skills and all that sort of thing there. And that was an amazing experience, living in San Sebastian. And I was the only guy in the kitchen who couldn't speak Spanish. I'd see the checks come in from the waiters, and they'd say, you know, one order of this, one order of that, obviously all in Spanish. But I'd learn how to read what the key words were, and then I'd be able to cook the food and all that sort of stuff. So, and then after that, I went to Muscat in Oman, and I was working at the Al Bustam Palace Hotel. because Shannon opened a restaurant there again. So he was sort of, you know, helping me find these little gigs around the place. Must have been about mid 2008, 2009, just as sort of the GFC hit, about a year. And then unfortunately the restaurant closed down. It just wasn't really sustainable.
In a delightful twist of fate around this time, Tom fell in love. And a new chapter of adventure began, which brought him to a crossroads.
I was lucky enough to meet a girl in Oman who eventually became my wife, Irina, who we now have three kids with, which is really cool. So yeah, we met there, and then we decided to go traveling together. And yeah, we did a couple of trips and then found our way back to Australia. You know, I did some odd jobs, surfing most of the time, playing a little bit of golf and all that sort of thing, just over 24 at the time. And then I got a call from someone who was saying that there was a gig available in Abu Dhabi. And I barely even knew what Abu Dhabi was. I'd never been there, you know, as I didn't really know what Muscat was either, for Jones the Grocer. There was also another thing on the table, which was the Fat Duck.
Like Vue du Monde, the Fat Duck is one of the top restaurants in the world. A one-time record holder for the fastest in the UK to achieve 3 Michelin stars. Plus, it's owned by one of my favorite celebrity chefs, Heston Blumenthal. So this part of Tom's story both surprised and confused me. Now, you already know that Tom ended up in the Middle East, but why would you give up an opportunity to work with Heston?
I was really keen to do that, but just knew that, one, you know, my wife would never see me if we both moved to this little country town in the UK and probably doing jobs that I probably knew how to do already and probably had been doing for a long time. If I was ever going to stick to the fine dining thing, I would have taken that course. But something in me just told me that, you know, I knew I was a great chef and I believed in my skill set and my knowledge, but in fine dining, to be one of the world's best and actually make it lucrative for yourself, the chance of success is so small. And it takes so much grafting and hard work to actually achieve that, that I didn't really want my life to be like that.
Perhaps you can now see how that focus towards your larger goals can help you weigh what I consider to be a really tough decision. And in 2010, Tom exited the fine dining world, motivated by this laser-sharp focus and a little competitiveness.
I always knew that I wanted to own restaurants. Well, I was working for Shannon Bennett for a long time, 5 years, and he opened his first restaurant at 24, and I didn't manage that feat. So I was pissed. I wanted to try and find a way to sort of beat the master in a way, you know. That wasn't, you know, all of my motivation, but no, it was definitely there. I was a competitive kid. Yeah, so that anyway, that was on the table, and I really liked the idea, but knew it wasn't going to be, you know, me. So the opportunity came up in Abu Dhabi, working for Jones the Grocer as their executive chef. It was an Australian brand, so there were synergies there anyway. They had one store about to open, which was the Mal Mamura branch in Abu Dhabi, and that they were going to be opening, you know, many, many more and in Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And I just thought that was probably my perfect chance to learn how to open restaurants, learning profit and loss and all that sort of stuff. Stuff that you don't really learn. People learn how to, you know, cook the most amazing food, but really how to run a restaurant economically, it is not taught in fine dining. And even in culinary school and all that sort of stuff that I did, I probably wasn't focused enough really to understand how important it was, like how to do a food cost or how to, you know, make sure my P&Ls are in check or whatever. Like, you know, it didn't occur to me at the time that was important.
You've heard on previous episodes how sometimes serendipity can bring the right situations to you. But what marks those successful entrepreneurs is their ability to grab those opportunities by the horns, even at the expense of the Fat Duck.
Definitely had timing on my side in terms of, you know, the fact that Jones the Grocer was doing really well. And, you know, I'd always known that I wanted to go and do something myself. You know, I sat down, had a chat with the owner and said, listen, I want to go and do something myself. And that's actually where I met Serge, my business partner. I was the executive chef. He was the store manager. I'm generally a pretty creative guy to be able to think about an opportunity and how to get the most out of it and really sort of understand how to get the market involved and get them to come in and believe in us and trust in us. And, you know, and it's the ability to sort of think openly outside the square. He had a business degree and was capable or more capable than I was at the sort of back of house stuff. You know, he was the perfect client, perfect person to be able to come in and do that sort of stuff. We sort of got together and said, you know, we could probably do something. And I wanted to, you know, really do something on the rerouting people's daily routine. That was exactly what I wanted to try and do, to make sure that we had this way of bringing people more than 3 to 4 times a week to our venues through amazing coffee, really good breakfast and lunch that's really affordable. It's healthy, it's good ingredients, and it has the same methods that I was taught years ago by the best chefs in the world.
And thus begins the story of a restaurant that defined a new genre in Dubai's F&B scene. Now, Tom and Serge picked an interesting location to set up shop, Al Khuz, which at the time was primarily an industrial area, lined with warehouses and a few shops, but just off the main artery of Dubai, Sheikh Zayed Road.
It was actually quite a bit of a process. It was probably about, a year and a half while we were sort of conceptualizing this idea of what to do for a business. We looked in all these different areas of Dubai, like where we would go and put the business, and, eventually sort of settled on Al Khuz because we knew that it was central. We knew that it was, going to be part of people's daily routine by up and down Sheikh Zayed Road. We knew that it had great parking. We knew that the rent was cheap, or much cheaper than the other side of the road, Jumeirah and all that sort of stuff. And we knew that it had an edge to it. People told us at the time that we were crazy. There was a lot of second guessing, but yeah, I just knew for one that, it was absolutely going to work. We were sort of like almost like the underdog in a way. Like, people didn't take us seriously or didn't think that we would, do any good. So, because it was just two young guys that put up shop in Al Khuz, and, who were they? Like, we had lines at the door in the first 2 weeks of a 220 seat restaurant, which was crazy because it was in the middle of nowhere.
So what was it that Tom and Serge did differently beyond just the menu? Remember that back in 2014, Al Khuz didn't really enjoy the cool quotient it does today. So how do you get people interested enough to find your spot and come to you? How do you get creative with marketing to drive that kind of footfall? And how do you know what will be crucial in setting a tone for the kind of place you envision?
We did a lot of things that probably people don't really know, or they do know, but don't know that they're actually forced to make sure that it would get noticed. So, like, we'd close at 4 o'clock because we knew that, like, no one else was doing that. And we wanted to focus on breakfast, lunch anyway. And we knew that if we close at 4 o'clock, it forces people to come at one time, meaning that it looks more full during the times that you're open. If you really make sure that people only come between certain hours, you know that you're gonna be busy. It means that the vibe's always good, which means it always is perceived to be doing very, very well, which drives more footfall because people know that it's the place to be. So yeah, little things like that, and then, like, not serving low-fat milk because, we didn't believe in not serving low-fat milk, and not serving decaf. We did things for a reason because we believed in them. Not serving soy milk because, 90% of the world's soy is GMO. We didn't want to have any GMO products in there. And all these kinds of things, like, that we just didn't do because, one, we believed in them, two, we believed that they would get noticed, and two, they would be respected because people knew that we had a standard. We wanted the staff to wear whatever they wanted to wear. Which was, gave them themselves the ability to have their personality shine. We gave them an apron, but, they could wear anything they wanted to wear. That year, we won, like, 3 awards or something, like, just within that year, just because it was such a different eye-opening experience for people. So yeah, no, it was damn scary, but it was fun.
When it comes to setting that tone, it's all about the first people you see when you walk in that door. And there was something distinctive, different about the people working at Tom and Serge. You were greeted with vibrant personalities, tattoos, cool hairdos. People who understood coffee and brewing techniques, and the ingredients in the dishes. In some ways, Tom and Serge's strategy defined who they would hire. And in some ways, who they hired became their strategy.
We wanted to have people that worked in our restaurants that really understood the type of concept that we were trying to portray, who have lived and breathed that culture. So, a lot of our staff were from Melbourne because we were executing a Melbourne cafe style of service. So, I handpicked all of our staff from different places in Melbourne. It also convinces the customer of its authenticity, which is a huge thing. And just generally making sure that we had people that really were authentically passionate and personable, just to make sure that they actually did give a shit about talking and conversing with a customer and were able to do that because they had something in common. The second thing, and I have to check this, and I have said this a couple of times recently, but I'm not sure, but I reckon that we are possibly the first cafe or restaurant in Dubai with an Instagram account. I don't know how I'm going to fact check that, but I have to go back and look at the first post of some places. And I looked around at our competitors at the time and no one else was doing it. And I was surprised at that. I knew that to get good content, we needed to get stuff that we could post online that was going to get likes and shares. So at the time, yeah, it was about making sure that we had people that had personality. That meant good fashion sense. That meant tattoos. That meant cool haircuts and, you know, all this type of thing. Like, you know, that was because it was different. It was edgy. And it was about showing people that F&B could be done in a different way in this city, not just the same cookie cutter approach that everyone else takes.
The natural next step now was expansion. But this came in the form of a new cafe called The Sum of Us. So why not a branch of Tom & Serge, already a wildly successful and award-winning restaurant and brand with lines out the door?
There's a couple of reasons. The first one was the fact that we wanted to have a coffee roastery at Tom & Serge originally, but we couldn't afford it. And we wanted to have a bakery at Tom & Serge, we couldn't afford it. That was hampering our ability to have full control of the whole process from start to finish of like coffee and bread. We knew that we wanted to bring that in-house so that we could control it and make sure that everything was to our standard the whole time. We knew that we wanted to open a second place relatively quickly. We started looking for a space for bakery and coffee rather than a whole cafe. And then, we got approached by someone who basically, you know, pointed us in the direction of this amazing location, which then we thought, wow, it's incredible. It's got valet parking. It's got two floors. It's got a big terrace on the outside, and you know, it was perfect for everything else that we wanted to achieve. But then the question came of how are we going to brand it? It's not really that far away from Tom & Serge, but it's a whole different market up there, you know, on that Shakeside Road area. Got a lot of businesses, commercial offices, and residential is pretty thick there and everything. So that we didn't want to compete against Tom & Serge and dilute the footfall. We didn't also want to be what we set out not to be, which was a business that then started to grow and become a franchise, and then all of a sudden we'd go and open another one in Abu Dhabi and that's a franchise of that. Dubai didn't need that at the time. It needed more of the owner-operated, individual-branded, personable restaurants that had a story to them. That was when the idea just came about, that we wanted to make it about all the things that we learned from Tom & Serge and about the journey of starting up and how we dealt with our staff and how we managed them and you know, how we cooked our food and how we roasted our coffee and how we baked our bread. So it was the sum of everything that made us who we are today. So the sum of us.
In 2016, they also had the opportunity to open up in a mall, quite a key location in the restaurant scene in Dubai. This led to the birth of yet another brand, Common Grounds, which opened at the Mall of the Emirates. They were now looking at something larger than just one or two restaurant concepts. And this is where the hospitality mothership came in.
When we opened Common Grounds, through a great opportunity we had with Majid Al Futtaim, just so you know as well, like if there was any business that we wanted to earmark for a scale up, it was the Common Grounds business, because we knew that it was going to go into a mall. When we realized that all of a sudden had all these brands, and then we also had two business opportunities with the bakery and the coffee roastery being their own B2B brands, we knew that it all had to go under some sort of umbrella. So that was where we called it Bull & Roo.
Bull for Sergio's Spanish origins, and well, Kangaroo for the Australian in Tom. As you hear Tom's story, you realize right away that he's constantly open to and trying many things. Bull & Roo have invested in a barbershop, for example. But there is this common thread. All the things that he tries are yet another step towards that larger vision he has his eyes set on. When we come back, how the company developed its core ethos across 7 brands, and how that vision continues to play a part in everything they do, even after one half of the now well-known team of Tom & Serge left the company.
I'm Shalina, professional organizer and host of the Declutter Me podcast on Emea FM. Each week we bring you a short and sweet episode on how to organize and declutter your physical space, digital life, and even your mental clutter. Look for Declutter Me in your favorite podcast player or visit declutterme.com/podcast.
Welcome back. You're listening to episode 3 of Tales of the Trade and the story of Bull & Roo. This episode is produced by Gaia, and original music for the show was composed by Reiner Erlings. Now, at Emea FM, we produce 3 other shows in addition to Tales of the Trade. I'd love it if you could check them out at emea.fm, by the way. And a few episodes have been edited at the wooden tables at Common Grounds, where the staff will ask me by name if I like a cup of their freshly brewed coffee, my usual beverage. I've actually followed Tom and his story almost unknowingly at first, watching how Jones the Grocer expanded across the UAE. And then knowingly from the time Tom and Serge opened and expanded into these multiple outlets. Perhaps purely because the psychology of cafe culture is just fascinating to me. But in some ways, this story has been in the making for over 3 years. Over multiple conversations with the different teams at Bull & Roo, and observing firsthand how they execute on their mandate. First at Tom & Serge, then Common Grounds, as well as at Brunswick, their eatery and bar concept. There's something about their spaces that just seems to create this stay as long as you want vibe.
If you look at all of our venues, we have strong Wi-Fi, we have, you know, charging stations everywhere and all that sort of stuff. We have newspapers lying around, you know, we have all that sort of stuff where it does remind people that, oh, I can sit here for a while and read a newspaper if I really want. They're not going to get shitty and, you know, kick me out because I haven't bought a coffee in 3 hours. No, we want you to be in there because we want to make sure that we feel like the community's in there. So the community, they're all community driven and all about making sure that the community comes back as regularly as possible. You know, people aren't really bringing cut lunches to work anymore. They're all eating out somewhere. You know, people want to have an hour lunch break. They want it, you know, rather than getting a, you know, some sort of delivery. It's better that they go out of the office for a while and they go and meet a friend and they go and do it in some sort of nice environment that makes you feel like you're definitely not in the office, but somewhere cool and trendy where you can people watch and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, we definitely try and make all our places fit that mark where they feel like you can come back really regularly and stay for as long as you want.
Which brings us to what drives the Bull & Roo strategy and ethos. A huge focus on what should drive any F&B business, customer feedback.
We're not building restaurants for ourselves. We're building restaurants for the community. So we definitely look at footfall more than we look at increasing average spend, if that makes sense. So it's about making sure that people come back all the time. But that's sort of like what is the backbone behind all of them. And then it's about thinking what gaps are there in the market in terms of food. Or a beverage offering or something like that. So, you know, Brunswick was driven by the idea that we didn't believe that there was a great relaxed space to go to that was serving quality stuff, food and drink, at a good price, in an environment that was casual and not grungy to the point where people are just getting wasted and, you know, falling over themselves. We look at customer feedback all the time and make sure that we're you know, understanding people's wants and needs and trying to fit what we do around that also. And it's proof to me that it is working because I do look at people like yourself who come in really regularly and say, wow, we must be doing our job well, you know. You feel comfortable, you know, the staff know you, I'm sure. Do they know your order?
Not just my order, they also remember all my customizations and replacements. And while the vision is so important, the company's growth depends on keeping people inspired by that vision.
Well, I can see what's going to happen in 15 years in my head. I know what I want to do and where I want to be with the business, but unless my staff know, or at least know what's going to be happening in 5 years, they don't really know what they're working for. No one's going to work a 12-hour day or longer if they don't know why they're doing it or what the real vision is. You know, like you've got to excite them somehow. So yeah, we've got a pretty big growth plan for the next couple of years that everyone sort of in my team, I'm trying to absolutely make sure has clarity on what that is. So at least they can see what the opportunities will be in the future and how they're going to prosper from what we do together. And that sort of helps because it's sort of, I know that the bigger I dream and the higher I set the bar, the more excited they get, so the harder they work. There's a select few people that work with us that have been with us from day one. That just really make the company work.
During the ascent of Dubai's restaurant scene in the early 2000s, those amazing individually owned hole-in-the-wall eateries started to get overshadowed by franchises and what I call investment restaurants. Places that weren't exactly an embodiment of a chef's vision or the owner's passion for food. This is why we felt that Tom & Serge played a really big part in defining their category of restaurants. Where today we see the scene exploding with amazing concepts driven by chefs themselves. In the early days of Tom & Serge, Tom took a hands-on approach by being in the kitchen himself, something he continues to do even now from time to time. And while this led to a few interesting incidents, what it really did was to establish credibility and personal connections with customers.
But it was probably rare for Dubai that the owner was in the kitchen. There's actually a funny story, I'll never forget this, when in the first couple of weeks that we opened, I was just finished in the kitchen, and it was late on in the afternoon on like a Saturday or something like that, just before we were about to close at like 3:30 or something. And I saw this young group of people come in, and you know, they'd sat down and they were cool, and they were, you know, they were having fun and whatever. And then they ordered, and you know, we sent the food to their table. This guy sort of, you know, sticks his hand up and asks for a waiter. But at the time, I was walking past with my apron on and a broom in my hand, because I was going to sweep the floor out the front. I went straight over to him. I was like, "Hey, what's up? Everything good? And you know, how is everything?" He goes, "No, I'm not happy with this portion of chicken. You know, I can't believe you're serving it for this price," and blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know, it's cheap stuff anyway. And, you know, like, what are you doing? I was like, "Well, first of all, hi, my name's Tom. I'm the owner of this place. And, you know, I wrote the menu that we serve the best quality chicken that you can get at that price point in Dubai. I'm telling you, it is French, it's corn fed, it's organic, it is chilled, it's not frozen. It comes in fresh every third day. Like, it's really, really good stuff." I was just telling him, just like, this is the portion size that we serve. There's probably about 180 grams of meat on that bone. He then, you know, basically thanked me and said, "Well, that's amazing. That's the first time I've ever had an explanation from someone properly. Thank you for actually opening this place." Like, he was actually happy that he'd actually gotten, you know, interaction from the owner, when he expected I was just some two-bit. I could see that if I didn't say I was the owner, he would have, you know, gone off at me, you know, and there would be no convincing him that, you know, I was, that the chicken was any good. But he believed the story, and it was false. No, I'm joking. It was true.
All of this can often sound pretty glamorous, garnering a reputation for being cool and doing inventive things, and frankly, getting many things bang on. But what about those ideas that along the way didn't quite pan out? What were some of the things they would have done differently?
How long have you got? There's always things that I would do differently, definitely. But if I didn't do them, I wouldn't be here today, or I wouldn't have more opportunities to do more stuff later. Yeah, not regrets, just different things I would do differently for sure, or ways to approach different situations or something like that. But you know, people say, "Why do you have 8 brands in the market? You know, why did you invest in a barbershop? You know, like, why do you stress yourself out by like trying to go to all these different things?" And it's, I suppose a lot of it's me being very inquisitive and a little bit of trial and error, and thinking that we can really penetrate a market gap that isn't being penetrated properly yet. Some of it sticks, some of it doesn't, you know, but you know, we always finish up, pay our bills. And if something doesn't work, then we, you know, we scrap it and we don't go that direction anymore. But there's little marketing activations that haven't worked properly. Like, do we do a lot of pop-ups? One, to, you know, of course it's about, you know, increasing revenue and but it's also about trying something different. You know, we've done ones that have been extremely successful with, you know, literally lines around the corner of Tom and Serge, for example. We did a ramen noodle one that was mental as well. But then we did one that was like, that had a full build-up for a whole month of marketing, and it just didn't work, which is the Indian one. We got that wrong, so okay, so that's fine. If we were going to do it again, we would have done it really differently, but at least the staff sort of learnt. You know, there's always mistakes that you make and you look back on, you know, whether it's operational mistakes, you know, PR mistakes, service, you know, anything that we sort of try and do daily. And yeah, it's menu items, you know.
Evolving a business at such a fast rate involves many things. And on the one hand, you've built this strong regional brand, a stellar reputation and credibility. But on the other, sometimes it can mean some fundamental changes, such as Tom's business partner, Sergio, leaving operations about a year and a half ago.
Businesses, especially one like us, where we were a startup and we grew really quickly in a city that was, you know, dying for more stuff that we were doing, like, we, yeah, we took the bait and we did a lot more stuff. That's stressful and it takes a toll on everyone. I was very, very driven to sort of continue the direction of the business that we were going, and as a chef, I'm really, really passionate about, this is my dream. There was no way that I would never not be doing this, you know, and I'll do this for a lot longer, you know, in terms of my life. I'll just see myself building restaurants forever. Yeah, Serge, probably still very passionate, but not coming from the same place that my passion was coming from in terms of the food and stuff and the creativity. And so, you know, we sort of decided that sort of he wouldn't really take any more part in the management, you know, about a year and a half ago, and that was cool, that was okay. I think he's recently just starting a family and everything, so. No, yeah, as I said, I really love this job, and it's something that I'll continue to focus on forever, and it's not for everyone, I suppose.
Being a creative type and wearing many hats, and operating a business that is 200 plus employees strong is definitely no easy feat. And being an entrepreneur can be a really lonely business at times. So you need a strong team and a really deep support system to make it all work.
I have some amazing people around me, which is the best thing, you know. I have a chairman as well of our company whose name is George. He's been helping, you know, for a long time, sort of giving me advice, and he's a bit older than I am, and you know, he lives in London, but you know, has more experience on the finance side and be more strategic, make sure I have the planning in place to be able to make sure that I can execute what I set out to execute. My father is also, I talk to him every day, but every second day I have a chat with my dad. He's a businessman and has done well in his career and understands people management and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I'm definitely not an absolute expert in this, you know, like I'm a chef, as I said, but I'm just so driven to figure out how to get this done that it definitely helps me make my decisions every day and figure out how to grow the company. And we're over 220 staff now, so.
And it probably doesn't hurt to be able to turn to Shannon Bennett when he needs advice.
I think he's pretty proud of what I've managed to achieve, I suppose. We talk every now and then, and sort of, you know, he still gives me a lot of advice and sort of, you know, tells me what to do, you know, and he's sort of the head chef where, no, you should be doing that. You should do this. No, don't do that. You stupid, do that. You know, not that you're stupid, but, you know, like in a caring sort of way, I suppose, he sort of, you know, tries to help make sure that I don't make a bad decision or anything. But it's cool. I feel lucky to have sort of a mentor like that around me as well.
And so after 7 different brands, a parent hospitality company, 220 employees with locations all across Dubai, what comes next for Bull & Roo?
I have some big ones. We've signed 3 new leases to expand Common Grounds. 2 of them will be open by January, February. And then the other one will be probably open in March. I can tell the areas. So DIFC, JLT, and Business Bay. I have signed another space for Tom & Serge as well. To be honest with you, we always said that we would never do another Tom & Serge in Dubai because we wanted to keep it, you know, more. It's the flagship brand of the group. If we were going to grow it, it would be only one in major cities. But I've had to change that idea based on the idea that I was just too tempted by an amazing opportunity that we have next year that I just had to put the main brand there. Yeah, another mega project for the end of 2019, which I'm working on at the moment, which is really going to bring something new to the city. That's really exciting me. And then I've got another idea for a tech startup as well at some point down the line. But that's like just an idea.
It's interesting as well, achieving this kind of success as an expat in a city like Dubai, moving your whole life and choosing to make all of this happen. And we wanted to know what it meant to Tom to have such a strong and loyal community thrive around the places he set up.
I've been here for 8 years now, and I really feel like it's been a huge part of my life. I suppose when you put so much time into a place, you know, you sacrifice time away from your family and so many people that you've known your whole life to come over to a city that you weren't born in, or, you know, even I have 3 kids now who were born here, so that's cool. So they're going to grow up feeling like they belong. It's been such a great city to me. I feel like everything that I add to it should be meaningful to the city, you know, and really help it, you know, sort of put it on the map in terms of what we do or how it's known as a culinary destination. I feel like we're doing something important.
From fine dining to redefining urban culinary culture in the region, Tom's journey is a testament to the fact that you've got to learn the rules like a pro so you can break them like an artist. You've been listening to Tales of the Trade from Amaya FM. You can subscribe to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you like to listen. You can also follow us on Instagram for more content. And if you've enjoyed this episode, you can leave us a review in Apple Podcasts or even a comment on our episode page by visiting talesofthe.trade/bullandroo. So many tales to be told, so many stories to be shared. We hope you pull up a chair and join the conversation.